welcome to the Pennsylvania Chamber's All Business Podcast, featuring the perspectives and unique insights of the Commonwealth's most dynamic executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders.
My guest today is Mark Richardson, the CEO of U.S. Light Energy. Me and Mark had an excellent conversation today. We talk all about Mark's background, how he got into the business. We talk a lot about U.S. Light Energy and their footprint here in Pennsylvania and all the great things they're doing and just kind of the status of the industry, where it is now and, you know, where it's been, where it's headed. So with that, and no further ado, here's my conversation today with Mark Richardson. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for joining me today on the All Business Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick.
All right. Can you tell us a little bit about U.S. Light Energy, about the company and what you guys do?
Sure. U.S. Light Energy is a solar project developer that focuses on distributed generation projects. For some people, that may not mean a lot, but it's basically solar projects that are connected to the distribution grid. In other words, kind of the same grid that your house is connected to, as opposed to the transmission network, which is where all the really big power plants and the big, you know, transcontinental and trans-state wires are connected to.
Okay. All right. So you guys are building like solar farms, that sort of thing?
We are. We build, generally focus on projects that are anywhere from a megawatt in size, which is about 3 to 7 acres, all the way up to about 20 megawatts in size, which is generally 50 to 100 acres. We do not really focus on the big multi-hundred megawatt utility scale projects that can often be, you know, thousands of acres in size.
Okay. Wow. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the position you're in today?
Sure. I know this is only an hour long podcast, so we could probably, or however long it is, it's way too long, but, it's a long story, but I'll hit the highlights. So, I had a residential small commercial construction company all the way back in the 2000s. And, as a result of the housing crisis, the bubble that happened in 2008, 2009, I was looking for ways to maximize our value to our customers. And you know, through several iterations, I started getting into energy efficiency through the Building Performance Institute and doing kind of energy efficiency, insulation upgrades, things like that. We were doing some weatherization projects with the Department of Energy, upgrading low and moderate income people's homes with upgraded insulation and windows and doors, air sealing, that kind of thing. And ultimately that led me to start to investigate solar. And I fell pretty quickly on community solar as a market segment, because I thought it checked a lot of boxes. It's kind of the Goldilocks market segment, in my opinion, in terms of scale. It's big enough that you can build projects at a reasonable cost. But also not so big that it, like I mentioned, takes up thousands of acres. And I also liked it a lot because basically anybody can participate, and anybody within a certain geographic area, or in many cases it's in with a utility area, can kind of benefit from the generation that's produced by those projects. So I thought that was a really neat concept. But back in 2009, there was no such thing. Community solar was really just kind of a glint in some folks' eyes. I think Colorado had a starter program where they were actually selling a panel's worth of energy to people for their homes. So we've come a long way since then, and we don't do just community solar, but you know, that was the kind of the market segment or the system size that I really thought was going to be beneficial. And it turns out that's been a very popular and high growth market segment, not only for us, but throughout the country.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think, yeah, you think back 2008, 2009, that was a different world. And, you know, when people think solar, I think they think a little bit, would you say people think have been more educated? They think a little bit differently about it now than they did back then? Or is there still like a long way to go as far as educating the public on what solar is?
You know, it's a great question. And I actually think both of those things are true. I think that it is vastly more understood, or at least socialized more people kind of understand that it's a viable source of power generation. I think the difference in terms of the education, I think at first it was really more just awareness. I think back in, yeah. I mean, look, solar actually has been around since the 1930s and 40s, right? The Bell Labs people, shortly after World War II, invented the first commercially viable solar module. And if you think about like the space race, satellites and things like that, they've been running off solar panels and batteries since inception. So it's really not a new technology, but this application of it is actually quite new. And I think in terms of, so really at the early, you know, when I was first starting to get into it, it was really more of an awareness that people weren't totally aware that it was something they could do. But now it's really more, it's more granular in terms of what people I think are seeking out in terms of information. And like many things that are happening these days, there's a lot of information out there. Some of it is good and some of it is not so reliable.
Yeah. Well, like anything, I'll tell you what, if I was doing trivia and you told me what decade solar started in, I would have been off by 50 years, 30s and 40s.
Yeah. But yeah. And many people would. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, really, I don't even remember in the 80s, not in the 90s, like if people had these things on their roof. I mean, I see it everywhere now.
It was very rare and it was really limited in many ways to specialty applications that were primarily what we now call off grid. So if you had a hunting cabin, for instance, or you had a research facility that was really difficult to get connected to a normal power grid, one of the ways that you can provide yourself with electricity was through a small solar array and using batteries to power oftentimes like DC, you know, refrigerators. Think about your, maybe if you're a camping or an RV enthusiast, right? You can, you run a lot of those power, a lot of that power is on DC or boats. Mm-hmm. It's DC power and it's powered by batteries. Solar can actually really benefit those kinds of installations pretty prominently, but that was really the start of solar was solutions to where it was uneconomical to connect to the, what is now the traditional power grid to connect, have the utility, you know, run brand new cables to your facility might not have been practical if you were, you know, a mile away or 2 miles or more away from the existing infrastructure.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it really, so yeah, the technology has been around, but the applications have changed and obviously the technology has gotten better over time.
Oh, for sure. We've seen massive gains in efficiency, you know, so more power density, you can get a lot more electricity generated in a much smaller area. The modules are certainly more efficient now. And just obviously because of the volume of production, everything's gotten dramatically less expensive than it was. Even I think when I started, the average installation price on a project was somewhere around $6 a watt. And now it's more like $2 a watt. Wow. It's just an order of magnitude. It's come down quite a bit.
Wow. That's impressive. And you see it like maybe even getting more efficient as time goes on.
Yeah. I think, you know, in terms of module efficiency, I see it getting better. I can say that on the inverter side, so the inverter is the thing that actually takes the direct current that's generated by a module and turns it into alternating current, which is used by our power grid. And that goes through a process called through an inverter. Those are already incredibly efficient. There's things called transformerless inverters, and they're in the 98 to 99% efficiency range. To get that extra kind of 1% out of those may be, you know, economically not viable, but they're very, very efficient. The modules themselves, I think power production on a module is likely to continue to increase as nanotechnology and other kinds of technology that we haven't had access to become more viable. I certainly see continued increases in efficiency and power output.
It's amazing. And I'll tell you what, as we're talking here, I just know that an AC/DC song is going to get stuck in my head.
One of my favorites too.
All right, let me pivot. I want to pivot back to the company real quick. Give us kind of a scope of your company and like how big you guys are. And more specifically, I think our listeners would be interested to talk about, you know, Pennsylvania, what you guys are doing here, what your footprint is here.
Sure. So we are a relatively small company. We have about 20 employees. We've got a few openings, and hopefully by the end of this month, we'll be up to about 25. But that doesn't include a lot of the vendors and, you know, engineering and legal and other firms that we use. So, you know, for us, you know, we carry generally around 25 or so folks. We're headquartered in upstate New York, but we do have employees and folks out in the field in a number of states, including in Pennsylvania. We've got a couple of folks that live and work out of for us, but live in Pennsylvania. We have, you know, and when we talk about company size, it's easy for me to talk about it in terms of megawatts and production, and that's not necessarily what a lot of people can relate to. So, just in terms of volume, you know, we've been traditionally anywhere from a $10 to $20 million a year company, over the past couple of years. Last year, we took on a majority equity investment from a company called Kimmeridge. Kimmeridge is actually traditionally an oil and gas company. So they understood the energy business very, very well. They also understood kind of energy development really well. And they 2 years ago started a carbon solutions fund, which we are one of the platform companies in their carbon solutions fund as they look to decarbonize some of their portfolio companies. So it was a really great fit for us. They came in and invested and gave us a real opportunity to have some runway and kind of look to the future and start to solidify some of our back end and expand geographically into new states. One of those states would have been Pennsylvania. We were already active in Pennsylvania, but we've been able to do more in Pennsylvania recently. So just some sense of kind of where, how and where we're participating in Pennsylvania specifically. Currently, we have 30 projects actively under development in Pennsylvania, and that's wow. The equivalent of about 150 megawatts of projects. And again, that doesn't always translate for too many people. But one of the things that does probably translate is what we look at as kind of the asset value and the economic impact of those. So 150 megawatts of projects is the equivalent of around $300 million worth of asset value. And in pulling up some statistics earlier today in preparation for this call, I was able to get some economic data. And for every megawatt of new solar that we create, that we put in the ground, there's anywhere between 6 and 10 jobs created. And this is for Pennsylvania specifically, and kind of the impact of that, of those jobs. Those are generally it's construction jobs. So they're, you know, $60,000 to $80,000 a year type jobs. And but the economic impact of that is estimated for our 150 megawatt portfolio is estimated to be between $175 and $360 million in the short term, and between $9 and $21 million a year of economic benefit in the long term. So this activity, it creates a lot of construction work, and that can be ongoing, but obviously the construction doesn't last forever. So there's a big boost kind of in the near term, but then there's ongoing, you know, asset management, operations and maintenance kind of. There's some ongoing economic benefit to these projects as well. So we really like to focus on that as a job creation mechanism, not only a, you know, electric cost reduction mechanism or decarbonization mechanism.
Wow. I mean, that's really, really impressive. You know, I'm glad you did the math for me so I don't have to do it manually in my head.
It took me a while. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's important for people to know, like, this, and you guys are, I mean, you're really, I don't want to say just getting started. You've been here for a little bit, but you're going to continue to grow, and that's going to, you know, obviously benefit all the citizens here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I think that's right. And we are, as solar companies go, we're actually a little long in the tooth, but the industry is still relatively new. Mm-hmm. You know, our company's been doing this, as US Light Energy for 8 years now, but prior to that, my partners and I all worked at the same company. So we've been together since 2011 as kind of a team. And so, you know, we're solar veterans, but there's a lot of new activity in the space, and we're really excited about not only the benefits that we think we can bring, but the progress that we can continue to make. And we're excited about the future.
Yeah. And when you look at Pennsylvania and your growth in Pennsylvania, like, is there something about this state that you just see as a great opportunity? Is it just that, you know, geographically very close to where you're at? Or when you look at Pennsylvania specifically, is there anything that stands out to you as why it's such a good opportunity?
So I would think there's a number of reasons that make Pennsylvania a great economic opportunity and a great place, frankly, for solar specifically. So the available resource that you really need, right, is access to the sun. I think that's a mm-hmm. big one. But the other one is existing energy infrastructure. And I think largely as a result of Pennsylvania's kind of dominance and participation in not only the energy sector, but in manufacturing specifically, mm-hmm. it has a really robust electrical infrastructure already in place. So, I mean, while it may be aging a bit, like every infrastructure in the entire country in terms of the electric grid, and in need of some update, there's already a really robust kind of electrical infrastructure in place. And I think that makes Pennsylvania very compelling for the ability to transition from, you know, more traditional forms of power generation to new, you know, whether it's solar, whether it's storage, whether it's hydrogen fuel cells or any other kind of new power source, including probably small nuclear reactors and other things that are probably on the horizon that may be some years away, but are certainly within our grasp in terms of the energy transition. We've found Pennsylvania to be navigable and accommodating when it comes to permitting. I think there are things that Pennsylvania can do better, but I think that there are things that they already probably do better than some other states that we do business in. And, you know, I think that kind of predictability and, you know, from a developer standpoint, the one thing that we always really want to achieve or that we'd like to see is consistency, right? To mm-hmm. be able to, if we're going to do a project in one place or you know, nearby, we'd like to at least have some framework and know what we're getting into. And I think Pennsylvania's actually been pretty good about that from a siting and permitting perspective. There's still some challenges for sure. And I think on the utility interconnection side, I think that probably could withstand some improvements in terms of that predictability and framework for you know, consistency purposes and being able to do things kind of repeatedly. But generally speaking, we've been very, very happy with the reception that we've got in most of Pennsylvania, and we're excited to continue to do more. And I think, again, this kind of, for me, it always goes back to this economic and job creation. I mean, we're a U.S.-based company. We're headquartered in New York, and I know that's where your northern neighbor, but we absolutely strive to really make a positive economic benefit in the communities that we do business in.
Yeah, no, that's great. And it's so true. I think it's really interesting what you said about the predictability, because that's what I haven't heard before. Mm. We do hear here in Pennsylvania a lot that that's one thing the chamber is always fighting for, is to streamline the permitting process and cut down on the red tape. But I thought that was really interesting from a developer standpoint. Just, yeah, the predictability, the good or bad, you don't want any curveballs thrown your way.
That's right. No, that's exactly right. And please don't mistake that for saying that there's no room for improvement, right? There's always
right. We know.
we can always do better in terms of, you know, how streamlined the process is. You know, I think whether look, throughout the country, there's been a lot of different kind of ways to try and tackle that issue, and all the way from the extreme of, you know, really, really localized home rule to, you know, state level kind of mandates and state level permitting, you know, guidelines and things like that. And I would say that I don't think there's a silver bullet, but as a developer, like I said, our main request is that it just be predictable and consistent, right? If you can understand what the process is at the beginning of the project, and you don't have to wait until you're halfway through to find out what the, you know, it's, I often equate project development to playing Texas Hold'em. I don't know if you're a poker player, but right.
I'm not very good at it, but I am familiar. Yeah,
sometimes I'm good, sometimes I'm not so good, but you got a couple of cards that you can see, but you don't know what the rest of the cards are, and you don't know what everybody else is holding, and you generally got to put in some chips to see the next card. And so a lot of times that's what development really is like, and you have to put in those chips or stay in to see the next card, and you're not always satisfied with the card. And so some that visibility and predictability is really important. And I'd say that's not in any way specific to solar. I think that's just development across the board. I think predictability is a key.
Well, thank you so much, Mark, for that great insight into, you know, your background and into your company and some of the great benefits of solar. And we just really appreciate you taking the time to join us today on the All Business Podcast.
Rick, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the All Business Podcast from the Pennsylvania Chamber. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. With almost 10,000 member organizations, the Pennsylvania Chamber advocates for job creation and greater prosperity across the Commonwealth. Visit our website at pachamber.org to learn more about us, our members, and how to become part of the statewide voice of business. We'll see you next time.